musician, actor, poet, author, social activist. Montreal's Norman Navrotsky has toured the world with cabaret, theater, and spoken word that engages audiences in the struggle for social justice. He has written over a dozen books and released more than 50 albums. A self-professed anarchist since the age of 14, Navrotsky has organized radical performance opportunities, performed his own work in the Montreal Anarchist Theater Festival, hosted discussion panels on anarchy and art, and spoken about the anarchist aesthetic. He also teaches part-time at Concordia University and gives workshops about using the arts for activism and social change. Cazzarola, Anarchy, Romani, Love, Italy, is Navrotsky's latest book. Wide in historical scope, panoramic in point of view, an ambitious novel spanning more than 120 years in the life of an Italian family, Cazzarola is a history lesson, romance, and love letter to Italy, all rolled into one. On November 9th, 2013, Navrotsky was in Winnipeg to launch Cazzarola at the Anarchist Book Fair and DIY Fest. That evening, he performed a theatrical piece based on four characters in the novel. Earlier in the day, I had a chance to interview him about why he wrote the book and the politics surrounding it.
Good afternoon, Norman. Welcome to CKUW.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I understand that Cazzarola is your first novel.
That's correct.
And so what made you decide to write a novel, and why about Italy?
I was on tour in Italy 5 years ago with another book, The Anarchist and the Devil Do Cabaret, which was a collection of short stories that had been translated, published in French, and then an Italian publisher picked it up, had it translated, published, invited me to the Rome Book Fair, organized a tour all across Italy with, you know, a dozen shows. And as I went from city to city, I noticed that there was something in the news, and I couldn't quite figure it out, but it was talking gypsy this, gypsy that, photos of gypsies, TV coverage showing camps, settlements, houses being bulldozed, police everywhere.
In Cazzarola, Antonio Discordia, a young Italian musician, falls in love with a Roma refugee woman. From the book launch.
I remember the first time I met her. It was in Piazza Navona. She was playing the violin. I thought she was so beautiful. She had long black hair, beautiful big eyes, a smile. I thought she was an angel. I fell for her, hard, right away. I kept bringing my friends back to hear her play. I'd buy her sandwiches, coffee, anything, just to sit down and talk with her. She's a virtuoso. She can make her violin sing, sob, cry, laugh. Cinca, that's her name. She's a gypsy. No, not your stereotypical wild-eyed fortune-telling gypsy. No, not at all. She's a Romani, the correct term for her people. They're Roma.
So it's only when I came home, realizing that the Italian tour had inspired me to write something new. And as I was writing something new, I needed to answer the question, but what really was going on all around me? So I did the research and realized, okay, I have to write about this. And then I went back to do more research, to interview people. And as I was interviewing people in the camps, I would ask them, well, what can I do to help you? And they said, please tell the world our story.
Navrotsky also played his character Cinca at the book launch, showing us the harrowing life of a Roma refugee family trying to survive in Italy.
First, we hear the ominous rumble of bulldozers, then the telltale crunch of steel against wood, neighbors yelling, screaming, babies, children crying, orders barked through a megaphone. Get out! Everyone out No. My mother, younger brother, sister, and I stumble outside into the blinding glare of police flashlights. The light rain falls. It's cold, it's damp. We huddle together and hold each other tightly. All around us, sheer panic reigns. Police are yanking people out of their houses, jabbing them with sticks, swearing at them. Bulldozers attack houses with people still inside who refuse to move. Merciless iron fist of destruction.
So I did a lot of research in libraries through friends, accumulated a lot of books, went online, a lot of interviews with a lot of different people, because I also wanted to understand the roots of the persecution of Romani refugees. Why? Where does this come from? And that took me to the roots of fascism, because that's a movement, as we all know, on the rise again all across Europe. Italy's no exception. And I wanted to know, well, where did this movement come from? So the book talks about that.
In Cazzarola, Navratsky also tells the story of the history of fascism in Italy.
Fascism was born in the late teens, Mussolini was the world's first fascist dictator. The idea was that the state and private business would take care of everything and everybody, and that everyone should sacrifice for the state. But the state essentially was serving the interests of private businesses. These are the people that set Mussolini up in power. They resorted to a fascist dictator because they were afraid of the popular power that people were demonstrating in the years leading up to his takeover of power. They were afraid of massive social upheaval, strikes, and eventual social revolution. So they positioned Mussolini as the strong man. And he essentially took control, wiped out all the opposition, imprisoned people, killed them, drove people into exile, even sent assassins after them around the world, in North America, in the United States, as far as we know. I don't know about Canada. The neo-fascist movement sweeping Europe as we speak draws its roots, its inspiration from what came previously. And they revere Mussolini. They revere Hitler. These are their heroes. And when you travel throughout Italy, it's frightening to see monuments, bookshops, museums dedicated to Mussolini memorabilia and the glorification of Mussolini. It's like the Chinese used to glorify Mao Zedong. Well, in Italy, they glorify Mussolini. And they also glorify Hitler. And it's quite frightening. And this is happening in Hungary, in Romania, in Germany, like all across Europe.
How can you identify like a fascist group?
Well, you know, there are men in suits and ties. There are skinheads wearing white power regalia. There are ordinary people who are unemployed, looking for scapegoats, looking for solutions, looking for a strong man, looking for some savior to come along and tell them everything is going to be okay. And that's what was happening in Europe, and that's what's happening in North America to some extent as well. I think it's safe to say that the state in south of the border is becoming very much, demonstrates a lot of fascist traits. It's the erosion of civil liberties. It's the suppression of any dissent. It's the removal of any opposition. And it's been coming for some time now. And it's not a quote-unquote conspiracy. It's just the politic that's necessary to keep the system that we know as capitalism alive and well and keep people under their thumb.
Navratsky put fascist ideology on stage at his book launch, performing the role of Roberto Fancazista, a wealthy senator and member of the ultra-nationalist Northern Patriot Party.
For all of Italy, this is a difficult moment. According to a recent poll, 3 out of 4 Italians today feel insecure. Is this normal? No. This used to be a country of happiness, of respectful, law-abiding, homegrown and bred Italians. But since January, we've noticed a sharp increase in crimes against property. And now this, a heinous crime against an honest, God-fearing, hard-working, devoted Italian housewife, killed
by a gypsy. Killed because we Italians have failed to protect our own country from the invasion I don't want to say the word immigrants just yet, Bruno. What do you suggest? People. Brilliant people. Yes, of course. People who don't respect our religion, our culture, our civilization, they have brought a crime wave, and the public response is one of shock, disgust, and growing anger. We, the guardians of Italy, of all that is Italian, will no longer stand by and watch our people be subjected to the disrespect, the indecencies, the rape, murders and robberies, the acts of barbarism committed by these immigrants.
But Cazzarola not only depicts fascism, it also shows the struggle against fascism from the point of view of anarchists.
My understanding of anarchism has to do with an opposition to the state, but it seemed almost like it was broader than that in this book, that there was other elements like organized labor and combating different forms of xenophobia, anti-immigrant sentiment, homophobia, and so on. So you're calling this anarchism and anarchists, but it seems like it's such a broad umbrella.
Europe has a different political culture. We have a very new political culture. It's much older in Europe. There's always been a strong anarchist presence throughout Europe. Since the 19th century, the late 19th century. Anarchists in North America evolved a little later, grew out of the trade union movement here as well. But in Europe, it was always much stronger. And in Europe, and in Italy in particular, anarchists were involved not only in organizing workers to defend their rights, but also at the end of the First World War, organizing the first armed resistance to the fascists. And they thought that was the only way to combat the rise of fascism, because Hitler was assembling an army of ex-military people to strong-arm trade unionists, dissidents, anarchists, socialists, communists, whoever. And the anarchists said to the others, "Look, you communists, you socialists, you other trade unionists, if we don't physically defend ourselves, we're going to be wiped out." And they didn't listen to the anarchists, and consequently, Mussolini rose to power, consolidated his power, and a lot of people died as a result of that. In North America, the anarchist movement at that time was also building through anarcho-syndicalist organizations like the Industrial Workers of the World, that were enormous once upon a time in Canada and the United States. They were broad-based movements, basically focused on workers, but drawing in other people as well, intellectuals, writers, playwrights, artists, people who respected how they accorded importance to the basic concept of our freedom has to be collective or it doesn't mean anything. You know, you can't just run around and say, "I'm a free person, I can do what I want," if not everybody is free. Freedom is a collective process. It's a collective condition, and we have to work on it collectively. In the book, I talk about the anarchists who try to include everybody in the movement, because also people were drawn to the anarchist movement because they recognized that it respected individual freedom. The freedom to be who you are, to do what you want, to live your life. In the book also, I talk about more contemporary anarchist movements in Italy, and much like the Occupy movement in the United States, which was inspired by a lot of anarchist ideas and incorporate a lot of anarchist principles in the way it evolved. North Americans today, I think, Canadians included, are more open to considering anarchist ideas as an alternative to electoral politics and to all the old school authoritarian politics that don't work, that don't resonate with people anymore. It's time for something new. It's time for something different. Let's explore.
So what would you say the crux of anarchist ideas are then, if you wanted to explore those ideas for yourself?
Respect for people's, liberty, freedom, respect for the process of self-management, of direct democracy, understanding that we can't leave our lives in the hands of anyone else. You don't want the Rob Fords and the Senator Duffy's and the Stephen Harper's of the world running your life, do you? I mean, how can we trust these people? We've never been able to trust them in the past. Why should we trust them now or in the future? Everybody sees the bankruptcy of that system. And so now it's time for us to come up with something different and talk about what it is, how we can see the world, Canadian society, organized differently without Stephen Harper's and Mike Duffy's and Rob Ford's screwing things up.
Cazzarola does not shy away from showing the violent side of anti-fascist resistance. For example, the story of Gino Lucchetti, an anarchist who made an attempt on Mussolini's life.
Mussolini's big black limousine comes rolling by. Okay, this is it. Steady. Come, Your Excellency. Come and receive your gift from the people. This is it. The end to your reign of misery. Now the master's guard dog will bite no more. Come, Your Excellency. I'm ready. Come and receive your gift. I reach into my pocket. And then, with all my strength, I hurl the bomb at the car, screaming, "Death to fascism!" Ah!
When I read the book, I was quite struck by the large amount of violence that was shown, a lot of killings and a lot of attacks on businesses and counterattacks. First of all, were you surprised to read about just the incredible amount of violence, of bloodshed that in this Italian history?
No, not at all, because we live in a country where bloodshed and violence is part of Canadian life. I mean, our country was built on the backs and graves of, you know, First Nations people that were slaughtered by the original settlers. The railroad was built on the backs of, like, you know, immigrant workers, Japanese and Chinese. You know, thousands and thousands of them died building the railways. A lot of the farmland was farmed and cultivated by peasants from Ukraine and Poland and Hungary who died of starvation and cold and disease, you know. And today, I mean, nobody's keeping actual statistics of how many people die every single year on the job as a result of, like, unsafe working conditions, how many people die as a result of pollution. So, you know, it's a part of everyday life. And then the everyday violence against the poor, you know, nobody ever talks about that. The violence in my book, the violence we read about elsewhere, is always, like, sensationalized a bit. But, you know, what's the difference between, like, somebody picking up a gun and shooting somebody and somebody else, you know, starving to death because of malnutrition, because they can't find work and there's no way for them to support themselves or their family? But we don't call that violence. Researching Italian history, I uncovered, you know, the stories, and that's just, those are the facts. But my book's not about violence. My book is a story. It's historical. It's trying to trace, as I said, the whole point of the book was to try and, it's a love story. There's a love story there. And there's a story of persecution of Roma refugees, but the story is essentially 130 years in the life of one Italian family. And like any family that survives 130 years, you see many wars, you see many uprisings, you see, you know, many, many facets of society going through change. And change takes many forms. Sometimes it's violent, sometimes it's not.
Did you think that learning about sort of violent tactics being used in specifically by anarchists is something that would make a lot of self-professed anarchists today a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, there's so much emphasis on non-violent?
No, I mean, it's a part of the history. It's a part of the movement. And there's times historically when anarchists have been forced to resort to violence, as in Italy, when they themselves were being assassinated, picked off, you know, tortured, imprisoned, killed. And how do you defend yourself? You don't turn the other cheek, you fight back. Otherwise, it's just stupid. Like, who's going to, you know, here, take me, kill me, please. You know, I'm not going to resist. No. Well, then you talk about today, Canada, the year is 2013. We've got to start thinking about how we're going to take some radical action to stop what's essentially a death penalty that is being leveled against us in terms of the environment, that they're poisoning our air, our water, our earth, and we're just sitting here, like, taking it. I mean, something's wrong. Hello, people. We have to wake up. We have to organize. We have to fight back and say, this is wrong.
Last month, I joined Cinca in a demonstration in Piazza Venezia to demand more housing for Roma refugees. We were a few hundred immigrants, supporters, Italians, Roma. There were about 1,000 police surrounding us. Cinca, she was brilliant. She spoke her mind, and all the media zeroed in on her, taking her photo, TV cameras on her. She's so beautiful. I was so proud of her.
Now, what about the word cazzarola? What does it mean, and why did Nevrotsky choose it for the title of his book?
My friends in Italy who were driving me around on the book tour would run into traffic jams and go, cazzarola. So it's like saying fudgicle. I think when you read the book, among the protagonists, there's a sense of frustration. And it's like, damn it, you know, crapo, fudgicle, you know. You run into walls, you run into, you know, dead ends, you run into black holes, you run into no answers, you run into things that remain frustrating. Like, you know, you find yourself in frustrating situations.
There was so much bad stuff happening to these characters, especially the Roma characters. And it made me wonder if things are getting any better or if they're just going in circles and going nowhere.
No, they're not going in circles and they're not getting better. They're getting worse right now. And this is all the information I'm getting, monitoring the situation online, because I monitor a lot of Roma news sites. And the persecution of Roma refugees across Europe has worsened since I started writing the book. It's horrific persecution on a grand scale that's taking place all across Italy in plain public view, and nobody over there is saying or doing anything about it, apart from a few refugee groups and human rights groups that I was working with when I was there. Neo-Nazis in Hungary and Romania and the Czech Republic are doing their work more openly, not being censored, you know, by anybody, being allowed to do it. And the same thing is happening in Italy. And it's kind of shocking to me to see that, unfortunately, my book is more relevant now than it was when I started writing it, that my book has lessons for people who are looking for explanations of, you know, where does this come from? Why are we confronted with this? But I think my book also is like an antidote for people, you know, looking for some different way to look at what's going on in terms of persecution and racial profiling and the you know, the racist stereotyping that takes place everywhere. And even in Canada, the same stereotyping that took place with my ancestors when they came from Eastern Europe to Canada, what's taking place today? You see it all around you. And look what's happening in my province of Quebec with the new Charter of Values. Like Islamophobia of the worst possible kind. So my book talks about Romophobia in Italy, but we can extrapolate and look at other phobias in the States and Canada and elsewhere in Europe as well.
So I also understand that you're on a 20-city book tour right now, and there's also a companion CD, also mm-hmm. called Cazzarola. Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell us about that project?
The CD, I released a CD, which is a soundtrack, a musical soundtrack for the book, because I'm also a musician in addition to writing and doing theater. And I wanted music that would complement the story in the book. I wanted music that would help people, you know, transport themselves somewhere else, either before or after or during reading the book. And I want to also provide like a capsule history of Italy through music. So the CD is 100 minutes of Italian music, Italian-inspired music, music I recorded in Italy with Italian musicians, music that we composed together, the songs I wrote, lyrics of with them over there and then translated into English or Italian, and songs that I recorded in Montreal with my different bands that were either like new songs or traditional Italian songs. And I also wanted to do some cross-promotion, realizing that maybe the book would allow people access to the music later if they were interested, or if they heard the music online on the air, they would be interested in the book. If they saw the theater piece, there's also the soundtrack for the theater piece that's partially included in the CD. So there's a lot of cross-promotion going on as well.
So for readers who are interested in buying Cazzarola, the book or the CD, where are they being sold in Winnipeg? Do you know?
The book is available online, like anywhere around the world. I'm not sure which bookshops in Winnipeg actually ordered it, but you could probably order it through Mondragon and any regular bookshop we usually shop, and any independent bookshop that you like. The CD, unfortunately, I'm selling the only remaining hard copies on the tour, and I'm running out of the original collector's version, but you can get the rest of the CD online from PM Press, my publisher, in the United States, and later I'll put it up on Crybaby.
Cool.
But they can also go to my Cazzarola site, www.cazzarola.ca, to read more about all of this, because I'm keeping a blog on the tour as well.
Well, thank you for your time today, Norman.
Grazie mille.
This piece was produced and narrated by Sarah Aronson, who also conducted the interview with Norman Nowrocki. Michael Welsh provided technical assistance. Featured music was Waltz for Cinca, along with other tracks from the Cazzarola soundtrack, either taken directly from the CD or recorded live at the book launch. If you are interested in purchasing the book or CD, please check out www.cazzarola.ca. Once again, that's www.cazzarola.ca. Thanks for listening. Ciao.